Smokey. Roll them. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
Saigon. Shit, I'm still only in Saigon. Every time I think I'm going to wake up back in the jungle. When I was home after my first tour, it was worse. I'd wake up, there'd be nothing. Probably said a word to my wife. Until I said yes to a divorce. When I was here, I wanted to be there. When I was there... I could think of was getting back into the jungle. I'm sorry. What's going on?
Podcast.
I know. I just know we were doing a war themed podcast this week, so I figured I'd start with the speech from Apocalypse Now, the war epic.
Buddy, you're about 30 years early. We're not covering the Vietnam War.
Wait, we're not?
Hell no. We're covering World War II. No, man, we're doing World War II.
Mark, I've spent the last month preparing that monologue for this. You're telling me now that the whole time it was for the World War II, not even the Korean War. We can't even do a MASH reference.
No, sorry, we can't do MASH.
All these years of acting preparation for nothing. So shit, I don't know nothing about the World War II, you know.
So what we are covering today are Looney Tunes war shorts. Three shorts that are about Looney Tunes characters going into war or helping the war effort. And thank goodness, you know, it's when you're covering World War II and Warner Brothers Animation, there's a lot of them that have not the nicest representation towards other nationalities that aren't from America.
Yeah, we're not doing Air McTare in this one. So
no, we're not. These three are just good, nice, wholesome, all around Looney Tunes characters in wartime setting.
Yeah, although I think we stretched the definition on a couple of accounts.
We did. I know.
Yeah, but the thing you have to remember is that these three that we're talking about are very much under the mindset of there's a war going on right now. We need to either help the effort or help boost morale in any way possible while still keeping patriotism high. It's a very, because again, World War II, it's different from World War I, was huge because you had the mediums of cartoons and film and all these different elements that could help get not only information to people faster, but also, you know, depict things. You know, this is a very well photographed, well filmed war, and which is obvious because there have been a million movies about World War II and also Vietnam. But we're talking about World War II because somebody would have told me that before. I'm still bitter. Yeah, this is a very, you know, you have to go in with, even if not all of these are especially World War II centric, other than one or two minor bits, you still have to think that, okay, Clampett and Jones and Freeling and all of these guys have the war on their minds, even if they're talking about other things. So this is very much under this of, you know, the war is on, how can we help? And how can you help? Because, you know, patriots.
Yes. So the three shorts we're going to be covering today are Super Rabbit, Drafty Daffy, and Falling Hair. Spencer, please don't kill us. No.
Yeah. Shout out to Spence12Medby, who's a friend of both of ours, who's in the Who's Line as an Anyway fandom community, who, this is his favorite Looney Tunes cartoon, is that correct, Mark?
Falling Hair? Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, he loves Falling Hair, and we're going to try and do it justice.
We better not fuck it up.
we better not screw it up. These are three really good ones. They're not, again, as you said, they're not very racist. They're not very badly aged, and they have a lot of different messages and standpoints about where we were in the war from that period, where everything we could talk about and think about was World War II. And before we actually get into anything, I just want to make a disclaimer for any people out there. I've never served. Mark, you've never served.
Nope.
My grandfather was a cook in the 50s in some armed service or something. Mark, do you have any relatives who've served?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. We are going into this with a very baseline knowledge of service and of the armed forces and of military. So if we get some details wrong about, and if we screw up even patriotism, that's, you know, we're from very non-military-esque backgrounds. So, although I will say that, you know, my girlfriend's brother is a, he is in some semblance of military, I believe. He is in the army, and he was in the Ukraine for a little while.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't want to piss him off because he's big and strong and can beat me up. So, James, if you're listening for some reason, please don't kill me. Hope he likes the apocalypse now. If not, we're going to find out.
Okay. All right. What's the first thing you think of when you think of early 1940s and American icons?
Popeye the Sailor.
Keep going.
James Cagney.
That was last week.
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry. Frank Nelson? Yes.
No.
No? Man, I am batting like 0 for 20 this week.
Superman.
Oh, I thought that was a Canadian property.
No. Yes, because the first short we're going to be covering is Super Rabbit, which was released on April 3rd, 1943. And okay. To present what happened that day, here's old-timey news reporter man.
Ah, yes, April 3rd, 1943. The Battle of Manor Street prevails. And it's a very...
I actually don't know what it... Hold on. What the hell is that? Damn.
You're doing great.
Thank you. Hold on. What? Okay.
April 3rd, 1943. The Battle of Manor Street. Of American servicemen and New Zealand servicemen collide. They battle. They beat the crap out of each other. The club of the Manor Street was a social center which was open to all military personnel. In 1942, there were around 15,000 and 45,000 American servicemen stationed in New Zealand. Some of these servicemen were not too keen, so they objected to Maori soldiers and a fight broke out. At least 1,000 men were involved in the subsequent fracas, which was broken up by civil and military police. It was 20 days before the finding of the Court of Inquiry was released. The news of the strike was censored at the time, hence much of this event was mythologized, including a claim that no Americans were killed. There were other riots, but not as good as the Battle of Manor Street.
Thank you. Thank you, newsman, old-timey newsman.
Hey, howdy, hey!
Hey, howdy, hey, that's me on a yo-yo.
In terms of non-World War II-related events...
Thank you.
...and a continuing trend of great musical talent being born, Richard Manuel, the lead singer of the band The Band... was born on this day. You know, the Waits, the movie The Last Waltz. Do you listen to the band? Any the band?
My mom actually saw the band in concert back in the day, so that's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So they must have been really cool because they were, you know, they were Bob Dylan's backing band for the longest time. So, which is funny because we talked about Bob Dylan's birthday a couple weeks ago.
Last week. You did.
Yeah.
Shit.
Insane.
Okay.
All right. Well, all right, again, so, shout out to Mr. Zimmerman again.
We have a little bit of trivia here. This was the 16th Bugs Bunny short ever made.
Oh, sweet.
And at the time of its release, the character Superman was only five years old in terms of comic release and pop culture relevancy. But also, what's important to bring up is that. And also around the early, around 1941, a cartoon studio led by a man named Max Fleischer of Fleischer Studios. He was responsible for making Popeye shorts, as well as a serial of Superman cartoons, which if you were to ask anyone who worked on DC animated projects from the 90s, early 2000s, they'll cite these shorts as inspiration. Because this short, it begins with a kind of a parody of the opening of the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons.
Yeah.
In the sky, you know, it's a bird, and a plane. Super Rabbit. And what cracks me up, especially with these three shorts, is they each have the with and the cartoon character who leads the short. What kills me is that these shorts are called Super Rabbit. Obviously, it's a Bugs Bunny short. Drafty Daffy, the character of the name of the characters in the title, and Falling Hare, which Hare Rabbit is going to be Bugs. I always found that the with credit to be completely unnecessary, but that's just me.
People in the 40s maybe needed a little bit more help.
A bit of a reminder, they were very new at the time. These
exactly. Characters. Nothing, things characters. Didn't always go without saying.
All right, so this was directed by Chuck Jones, written by Ted Pierce.
Woo.
And we start with a typical Superman introduction. We find out that it's actually Super Rabbit.
By the way, Mark, the beginning, that intro where it's like people, you know, look up at the sky. It's a void. And the one guy who goes, nah, it ain't a void, it's a dive bomber. That's Ted Pierce, by the way.
Oh.
I recognized his voice because I recognized his Babbitt voice from A Tale of Two Kitties. Because it's basically, his Babbitt voice was basically just close to how he actually sounds. So I recognized Ted Pierce from that.
That's funny considering that this short doesn't have voice credits. It's just Chuck, Ted Pierce, Kent Harris, who helped animate and Carl Stoll as music. That's it. So
yeah. Well, if you want another voice credit, because it's not just Ted Pierce and Mel Blanc, because the professor that we introduced pretty soon into this is Kent Rogers, who was responsible for a lot of the celebrity impressions in Hollywood Steps Out. Yeah, it's hysterical. Yeah.
Wow. So. Yeah, so again, we have this, you know, this typical, you know, narrator voice going like, yes, it's Super Rabbit. He's faster than speeding bullet, and then just a cork gun goes off.
Yeah.
Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, and of course, looks just up the building, and he just falls from this high up skyscraper. And of course, Nero's like, oh, this is Bugs, no, Super Rabbit. He's the Rabbit of Tomorrow. How would he become the Rabbit of Tomorrow? Let's turn back the clock. And then we get an origin story. Man, don't you just hate how they constantly retell the origin stories to these things? I mean, it's Super Rabbit. Come on.
Well, you never know. I mean, you might need to give a backstory, although I do see what your point, where it does sort of hamper the structure of this cartoon a little bit, as we'll get into.
So we're introduced to this typical professor-looking design named Professor Canifraz, which, I don't know, when I was watching the cartoon, about the narrator saying Canifraz was kind of like murgled down with all the sound effects in the lab. So I couldn't really understand, but again, it's not that important. He only has like three lines of this thing. So we cut to all these like beakers and funnels, and there's a little Eat at Joe's gag, which I never understood. But
well, it's just a good gag, you know. A lot of cartoons having Eat at Joe's, and we've hit our first Eat at Joe's joke of the podcast, which is great.
Yay! And then we go to a crate. There's Bugs Bunny, and the crate just says, you know, Rabbitus, Itius. Americanus. That's funny because it's a stupid rabbit. And then essentially we got the professor just saying, listen, rabbit, I've made this super carrot that will give you magnificent abilities. If you eat it, you'll gain these powers. Marsh is like, oh yeah? Okay. Eats the carrot. And there's no, like, big moment of him getting his powers, the professor just goes, and now you are Super Rabbit. Like, okay.
we don't have time to do much else.
We don't have time. We got to get to the to our conflict here. So Bugs just goes, okay, well, just go and change my costume. And then we have the first of our little runner here, where he goes to the phone booth because, again, very classic Superman tropes are made fun of in this short because at the time they were new, which is kind of crazy to think about, that these Superman tropes we're making fun of was new. We were so used to them being, like, constantly made fun of, like, oh, the phone booth and, you know, later the Clark Kent secret identity. That's not at all a good secret identity, so... Anyway, so he comes out of the phone booth, and of course he's dressed up like Mary Had a Little Lamb. That's funny. That's nice. It's like, oh.
It is very funny.
Wrong costume. Goes back. Comes out in Super Rabbit costume. Goes, ta-da. And of course, the costume's too big on him.
That's nice. That's a great detail that doesn't get pointed out too much.
No, and the professor's like, okay, just here are these. You know, and the Bugs just takes these super carrots because... In this version of a Superman type, Super Rabbit doesn't have a kryptonite so much as his powers are restricted by time. So like every like 15 minutes or so, he has to eat another super carrot to regain his super abilities.
Yes, these carrots have the same powers as prescription drugs.
So as soon as, so before he's about to fly off, he reads newspaper, and apparently there is this guy in Texas named Cottontail Smith who is just killing all the rabbits in Texas because it's the 40s, and what else are you going to do? And of course, our favorite thing to do here is, thanks to high-definition remasters, you can read the newspaper. And, like, this one's about how, like, if some like Democratic meetup or something. Anyways, so he finds out there's Cottontail Smith. He's killing rabbits. So of course, Super Rabbit.
I think you're burying the lead here because there's the shot of the newspaper, and it's just a picture of Cottontail Smith, and underneath there's a big caption that says "I hate rabbits" in all caps. I love that gag. It's just the most on the nose thing. It's just like Cottontail Smith, your opinion on rabbits. I hate rabbits. Thank you, award-winning journalist, you know.
And of course, a funny thing about this is apparently the design of Cottontail Smith, not so much the voice, we'll get to his voice soon, but when we see him, apparently he's modeled after Lyndon B. Johnson, who at the time was a congressman. So...
So this episode does have to do with Vietnam after all.
It really does. So Bugs just, you know, he flies out. So he says, you know, bye to the professor. We don't see him again. He flies out the window. And one of my favorite gags here is he's flying.
Oh my God.
And it would just see a horse walking in the clouds. He's just walking in air. And then Bugs just says, yeah, and Bugs just says, no, hi, hi, Doc, you know, and flies away. And the horse just goes,
a rabbit, up here?
Just the most, just...
I love that gag.
I love it. It's random, but actually funny. So then he flies in to deep in the... I just got this.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Deep in the heart of Texas. And then.
Thank you, Paul Rubens.
And then Bugs just like, oh, what's going on here? And then literally another Bugs Money model, but it's like colored yellow and green, just like, oh, it's Cottontail Smith. And then all the rabbits are running away. And then Bugs just goes, time to meet to be disguised as a mild-mannered forest creature.
He does a Clark Kent. Yeah.
It's total Clark Kent with a hat and glasses and whatnot.
Yeah.
And Bugs just, you know, he counters Cottontail Smith, And we have this great little moment here of just because Condell Smith, he's on his horse. And Bugs jumps up to ask, "Oh, what's up, Doug? And like, "Oh, I'm hunting rabbits." It's like, "Oh, well, why hunting rabbits?" Like, "Because I hate rabbits." Uh-huh. "If there's anything I hate more than want than a rabbit." And while this is going on, they're going in and out of frame, and like every like two up and downs, they change position. It just,
yeah. And then he's riding Cottontail Smith.
It's two rabbits. It's like, okay.
Such a good gag. Again, this isn't even a Clampett cartoon, but it goes back to the sort of Tale of Two Kitties sort of whenever something goes out of the frame, it changes drastically and just play with that speed kind of thing. So that's a great gag. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Mugs just goes, okay. And then not Sam Smith. Hilarious.
I know that he looks like Yosemite Sam, and I know that his name is Smith, but that is not Sam Smith.
No, it's not. All right. So then Condell Smith realizes, wait a minute, that's a rabbit. And then, of course, was like, "I didn't say a rabbit," goes back into the phone booth, which, again, it's just a phone booth out in the middle of the desert.
I love that gag, too.
And it comes out, and it's Super Rabbit. Yeah, it's Super Rabbit. Yeah. The underdog. So it comes out, it's Super Rabbit. And then, of course, you know, we get, again, just the classic Superman stuff of, you know, of Cottontail Smith, you know, shooting Super Rabbit. And, of course, the bullets have no effect on him. And Bugs just goes, "Okay, well, here's a cannonball. You're shooting with a cannonball." And then as soon as he's about to do it, Bush goes, "Wait a second, it's no super carrot just as a precaution." And then we have this pretty fun bit of just this cannonball goes off. And then Bugs and Cottontail Smith just have a basketball match. Oh, wait, no.
Love that.
All right, okay, so it starts out with, you know, Bugs just throws it to the horse and the horse catches it and the horse throws it back to Bugs. And then we just have, because Bugs is really fast, he then starts having, and this is a guy that Frizz Freeling would use in Baseball Bugs, and that Super Rabbit is so fast that he can play an entire game of basketball by himself, including being the hoop. In fact, fast that he can take Cocktail Smith and the horse and turn them into fans.
I love that chant too. There was a lot around here.
A lot of just cheering him on. And of course, Bugs just messes with them again. He flies up, flies across, and their clothes changes to where the horse is wearing Cottontail Smith's clothes, and Cottontail Smith has like just his undergarments on.
I love the horse is actually like a character in this too. Like, it's more like a horse is like an anthropomorphized sort of, like, you know, like just the horse and Cottontail Smith. It's not just like, you know, he's there on the side. It's just like, oh, the horse is part of this too. The horse is a villain too. Which that's such
and
a silly
Looney Tunes. And so then after that, we go to Bugs in the sky, thinking like, okay, now how else do I mess with these characters? And then we just swipe over to a plane flown by Cottontail Smith and the horse. That cracked me up. And of course the horse is in the plane. So it's just this great little moment. The horse is pointing out that, okay, they're Super Rabbit. Fly down. And Bugs, he's not noticing. As soon as the plane hits him, Bugs just takes the plane. He just takes the body of the plane. And it's just Cottontail Smith, the horse, and nothing else. And somehow they're still flying. That's just this great moment of the horse just, again, tapping Cottontail on the shoulder and just pointing down. And of course, they just fall. Then Bugs throws the plane down too, so that they can get like destroyed by the plane?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. So then we get our ending. Our slim reason on why this short is in a wartime episode.
But it's a good reason, though.
It is a really good reason. So, Bugs, again, he's feeling, you know, very sure of himself. But then as soon as he's about to eat more of his superpower carrots, he fumbles and they all fall into the ground. And there's this just great reaction of Bugs' eyes pupils getting bigger. It just goes... It just falls down. We then cut to a very nicely drawn shot of Bugs smelling the chopped off carrots.
Yes, I love that shot.
It's a very nice shot. As we follow these carrots that have already been eaten, and we see that Cottontail Smith and the horse have become super, super sized. It would take the Superman comics how long to give Lex Luthor a super suit that could take down Superman?
God, I gotta go back and see what the comics have done with that. I don't know. Took him a while though.
It takes them 5 years of Superman being created for Warner Bros. To go like, but what if the bad guy also had Superman's powers? So Bugs realizes that, okay, well, this will set the job for a real Superman, and because this was 1943, they couldn't then just cut to B-roll of Superman the movie because it didn't exist yet. Because
he's not Errol Flynn.
He would play Superman if they did a 1940 Superman movie.
No, he wouldn't. He'd play a Superman villain.
Errol Flynn is sod.
Actually, no. Now that I think about it, what's his name? Basil Rathbone would be Zod. That'd be great. Because he was the villain in the Robin Hood movie and in Mask of Zorro, and in, he's great. So, no, he'd be perfect for Zod in a weird 1940s era live action Superman.
And Superman would be George Reeves, of course.
Yeah.
So, then we have just, you know, Superman, Super Rabbit goes back into the same thing. Super Rabbit goes into the phone booth again, comes out. He's dressed up as a Navy officer because he's gonna go fight the war effort. And Bugs just goes, sorry guys, I can't play with you anymore. I got some important work to do. And Mark records the sign that says, you know, Berlin, Tokyo, and points east. Finishes a little heim, and then we iris out on that visual. So the United States Marine Corps really, really loved that ending. So much so that they made Bugs Bunny a Marine. Actually, the United States Marine Corps actually insisted that the character be actually inducted into the force as a private.
Yeah.
Which happened. He got dog tags, too. And
yes.
And apparently the character was actually promoted until Bugs was discharged for his service at the end of World War II as a Master Sergeant.
Oh, my gosh.
So if...
That's awfully nice of them.
Nice. You know, again, just, you know, a little tip of hat to the war effort.
By the way, do you like that ending? What's your opinion on that ending?
It's a turn. You definitely do not expect it, but it's good. It's an ending that isn't, again, it isn't too dated. It's like, you kind of get it. Like, oh yeah, he's going off to war. That makes sense, because, you know, the Army or Navy are actual heroes and stuff. It makes sense.
Yeah. No, I honestly really like that ending as well. I think Chuck Jones's message with that one is that instead of basically, you know, it's the escalation of Superman being a metaphor for just, you know, the average person's hero. And it's basically a way of saying, okay, we can do these things where a hero is a superhero who saves the world and doesn't respond to bullets or whatever. But a real hero can go out and fight wars and bring home the American people and so on. So basically, he was basically revising heroism, or what heroism should be in 1943, to be, you know, I'm going to go off to war instead of playing these sort of, you know, Superman games. And I think that's actually a really good message. And I like that ending a lot. So,
yeah, in terms of how do fans of Superman like it? This cartoon has been put on so many Superman media, it's kind of ridiculous. Because, it's been on its own collection. In fact, the moment where Bugs is playing with the cannonball was used in a commercial for the third Golden Collection. And it's also been on it's part on two Superman sets. It's been on the Superman Collector's Edition on disc 13. My God.
That's a lot of discs.
13. Damn. And it was on Blu-ray on the Superman motion picture anthology. It's on the first disc. It's easier to manage than 13. And and it's on streaming, which is really nice. And of course, the greatest irony of all is that at the time of this short's release, Detective Comics were their own company and Warner Brothers Animation were their own. And now Warner Brothers owns DC Comics, so they own this short. They also own Stupor Daffy, which was the McKimson Superman short, except this time it's Daffy Duck as Superman. So I'm sure we'll get to that one eventually. Yeah. Right, so in terms of my Anvil rating, I think you may be shocked by this. I'm giving it a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Here's why. So I think while in terms of big laughs, it had about 1-2 for me. You know, I really liked the drawings during this one. I really liked the horse up in the sky thing. That's really good. Yeah. I found the cartoon to be cute in nature. Now, that's a bad thing.
Okay.
It's like a nice, pleasant one. They could just throw on and be entertained for a little bit.
Okay.
I also like how, because this is 1943, so 2 years. So this is 1943. So by then, the Fleischer cartoons were about 2 years in. In fact, in 1941, the Fleischer Superman cartoon got nominated for an Academy Award. So I like how this cartoon is kind of like one like kind of established already animation studio kind of giving a nice, like, you know, a good job pat on the back to a studio that's newer than them.
Right.
Fleischer. That was nice. And, you know, I think if you are a Superman fan who has a love for Max Fleischer cartoons, any Superman media, really, I highly do recommend this short.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like it a little bit more than you do. I gave it a 4 out of 5 because I think it's just a very strong, you know, I would have loved to see more of Smith and the horse and more fleshed out. But at the same time, it's a very good Superman homage. It's a very good, you know, sort of fun hero story. I love the ending. There's good gags. It's simple. It's a very simple short. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of charm to this one, and I genuinely like it. So we're going from the middle of the of World War II to arguably the end of the conflict with this next one. Because Drafty Daffy is the last wartime Looney Tunes cartoon.
Really?
Come down in early 1945. And by then they've done, you know, their Air Meets Hair, and they've done their Scrap Happy Daffy, and they've done a lot of different how you can help the war effort kind of things, and any bombs today and all that. And this is really the point where it starts to become more of, okay, what else we got? And thankfully it's the tail end of the war, because this was going from a lot of the rah-rah patriotism Looney Tunes to more of a satirical look at other aspects of the war effort.
Oh, yeah.
And because, yeah, I kind of love it because it's, I mean, I like the stance as opposed to more of the rah-rah wartime shows. Instead of serving the country, making scrap metal, flying jet planes, this one focuses on the all-too-relatable concept of draft dodging. The draft dodgers of history range from commendable, mostly hippies and rock stars trying to protest the war, to detestable, you know, sons of rich people faking bone spurs to sit on their ass for another couple of years.
Yes.
But it's a good way of selling the issue. I mean, putting Daffy Duck, famed goof and coward, as a draft dodger is a good way to not only express, like, hey, draft dodging is bad, but also basically saying this is the kind of person who draft dodges. I have a good on this day for this one, so I'll do...
old-timey war voice Jordan. Okay. January 27, 1945. A hallowed day in Poland. Soviet troops liberate Auschwitz and Birkenau concentration camps in Poland. It's a great day and a day of liberation for Jewish Americans and people who celebrate that faith to this day. Very important, and it's only the beginning of the mass liberations over the coast of the next couple of months. Thank you to those boys from America and also from the Soviets, who I guess are on the same size at this point. You're doing a great job, boys. That's all from News Brief Jordan.
Thank you, News Brief Jordan.
Wow. That's the timing, because literally like yesterday they're like, yeah, like 40% of Gen Z don't think the Holocaust happened or like don't know about it. It's like, my God.
Yeah, to any young people listening to this, yes, the Holocaust happened.
That's horrible.
This shouldn't be disputed. As the grandson of someone who grew up in Germany while the Holocaust was going on, I can attest to the fact that it happened. Her hometown, basically, she showed pictures 1935, 1945, 1955. And in 35, her hometown of Solingen was, you know, it was a working class town. They made cutlery. And in 45, it was decimated because all the cutlery was being made into, you know, wartime materials. And the place was deserted, almost a ghetto. And in 1955, things were beginning to be rebuilt again. And progress was beginning to return. So as someone whose relative grew up in Germany at that time, I can attest to the fact that this was a very different, harrowing time because, you know, rise of fascism and everything. So to see people disputing that is sad.
And not knowing about it, like, come on, it should be taught more schools.
Anyway, this is a Bob Clampett picture, a Lou Lilly script, which means, wait, crap, am I finally going to say good things about a Bob Clampett cartoon?
That's what I was, I forgot it was a Bob Clampett one. When I saw, like, Bob Clampett did it, I'm like, Jordan spent the entire last episode crapping on Bob Clampett. So I'm like, oh, an actual good one. Yay.
Oh boy, am I excited. Because the thing is, I watched this a bunch of times when I was younger. I like this one. I like Drafty Daffy. It's a good one. And I'm going to explain why as I get into this, because it's aged honestly kind of well.
Oh my God, so well.
Yeah, because it's a really simple concept. And once it gets into the flow of it, it's sort of universal, not to drop another company. So we start this cartoon with Daffy reading the paper. I didn't zoom in to what the paper actually said in this one.
There wasn't much detail in this one.
But it's commending Tales of the Allies, and Daffy's exciting, you know, a smashing frontal attack on the enemy rear. And from here, Daffy does some random flag waving, singing about U.S.-related songs, praising Dwight Eisenhower, getting up in the rah-rah stuff, which is honestly, this is a very good satirical point. It is one thing to praise the armed forces and the military from afar, from your couch, but it's another thing entirely to join the fight and do some of the work yourself. So Clampett's point here is that patriotism is callous and empty if not backed up by actually doing anything, which is a really good point. I mean, maybe a bit heavy-handed, but a good point. And it's a very, you know, especially in 1945 when you've got to be doing your part in the war effort. If you're just sitting there and saying, yeah, go armed forces and not doing anything else like Daffy is doing here, that's not a good look.
And, you know, maybe this may have something to do. Maybe Clampett didn't like the shorts that Warner Bros. Was doing for the Rawa War efforts.
Well, he made one.
Yes, but actually maybe he did that like, okay, it's for my country. I have to do it. You know, like back of his head, like, this is such bullshit. We're just making fucking cartoons. This isn't actually like, you know, we're not actually going out there and put our lives on the line for this. We're just having Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig sing the song we thought of in like 5 minutes. Yeah, so I can imagine just the beginning of this short being Bob Clampett's like, hey, look at our little character being all patriotic and shit. Remember this from the past like 3 years? Aren't you kind of sick of this by now in 1945?
Yeah, but there's a reason, obviously. It's to hammer down the satirical point, because immediately after this, you know, first of all, this is the second cartoon that wrote a feature, the tune The Sands of Montezuma or whatever. And Daffy is singing it as he learns, you know, the little man from the draft board is coming to see me, which is very good. I also love him singing, you know, I hear the bells of freedom ringing. Oh, no, it's just a phone for me.
That's
very, very cute. Also note that in answering the phone, Daffy does a full-on, yeah? Frank Nelson returned. And then, you know, he finds out, oh, yeah, the guy from the draft board is coming over with a letter. And Daffy just goes into anguish when he realizes it had to be him. He points to a fish. It couldn't be you. He points to his mirror reflection. It couldn't be you. It had to be me.
He points to a mirror. I love that detail. I love that so much. He points to a mirror of himself.
He's breaking out of hysterics because he doesn't want to actually go to war and do the thing that he was just singing about is great because it can't be him doing it. It's got to be some other poor schmo, which is, yeah, back to the main point. So we get the beginning of what this short is going to be where, you know, Daffy looks out the window with his binoculars to see if he's come, and he pans over, and we get a very specific eye shot of the little man outside the window. It's a very Clampett idea.
Very nicely drawn.
Yeah, oh, well drawn.
Very nicely detailed.
But it's just a very wild zoom Clampett thing. And then we just get into the speed of this cartoon, where Daffy is blocking the door and throwing barbed wire around everything he's blocked it with. Passing eight of the same back routes in his house, running upstairs in a cloud of color and smoke, just anxious as all hell to get away from this guy. And, you know, obviously, you know, the whole thing about this cartoon is that the little man from the draft board, who's sort of like this droopy dog-esque sort of character, always catches up with Daffy, no matter where in the house he goes, no matter what he does. Like, he literally goes upstairs, opens the blinds, and there he is. And... which is great. And I love the gag where Daffy tries to outsmart the guy by putting on a beard and glasses. He lifts up the blinds to reveal the man from the draft board has done this as well. Why is Clampett working so much for me in this? I was just pooping on him last week, and now he's just winning me over.
And also, he's only had, like, one line, but literally every line said by the man from the draft board, I've said in my own life, and is... iconic.
Yes.
Every line said by Man from the Draft Board is an iconic, classic Looney Tune line that's been said by other characters, but they're all said by this one character.
Great moments in cartoon dialogue. But yeah, especially like this one, this next one, because Daffy literally buys a plane ticket to the North Pole, rushes out the door only for a great angle on the Man from the Draft Board on this front step going, is this trip really necessary, son? And sticking the letter right toward the camera. That's a great angle. That is so cool. He's trying to incite the sort of paranoia of Daffy in actually making the short, which is great. And then the next couple gags are very similar. You know, Daffy slamming the door, making an impression on the guy in the door running from him as he keeps catching up. Though I love the one as Daffy puts the bomb in the closet where we see, like, he's sort of stuck in the door from behind. The door is, like, just like a burlappy kind of material that he's, like, gotten stuck in rather than, like... like it's like the actual extent of the cartoon logic. It's like the door stretches and you can see the little edges of it. Daffy is great in this cartoon because he's clearly not meant to win, and he keeps losing and finding peril in such silly ways. And also, since the man from the draft board defies logic and is always meant to win or get through, it provides a very funny dynamic or mix of options. Daffy is always supposed to lose. The man from the draft board is always supposed to win. This is going to keep happening in more and more funny ways. And it's just a really fun and illogical, almost, sort of escalation.
Yeah.
Like, the lengths that Daffy goes to near the end to lock the guy in a safe, build a wall, build another wall, several more walls, and literally as home sweet home sign.
He built the house. He built the front of a house.
Yes. just in hysterics and madness. Mel Blanc is doing a great job in this cartoon of accurately displaying the madness and hysterics of Daffy because he does not want to be committed to doing this. And it's one of his best Daffy performances, perfect. I think. He's going mad. The end of this cartoon is masterful. Daffy ends up blowing himself up with a rocket hurtling down to Earth. He lands up in hell. He can't even say hell. He's stuttering through it, you know, for the Haze Code.
Hey, this place looks like he... hey, it is! I am in... well.
And then he calms down, he recognizes where he is, and then he just finally thinks he won. Because there's no way in the place he's in that the man from the draft board can be here.
And of course.
Could argue this is a bit of commentary, is that even in hell, the draft can still get you.
Exactly. And it's basically the message of, you know, you got to go in and fight for your country or else it's going to follow you to your death, which is deep. It's very deep, especially for Bob Clampett.
Yeah.
Mr. I'm not going to be deep. I'm just going to throw some impressions and see what sticks. I'm not bitter. I'm saying nice things about it. I'm not bitter. I'm still in psych. So I love that ending. I love the escalation of all of that. And I love this cartoon. I think it has the most manic energy, but it's controlled. And for a very, very funny purpose. Like, this is a chaotic cartoon, but it has a nice message against draft dodging that, while kind of heavy-handed, works because it's at the expense of Daffy, and Daffy keeps making it worse for himself. Now, it is slightly one-dimensional in terms of how a lot of the gags go, but pretty much all of these gags hit because of the energy, speed, and madness of the animation. So because of all the power Bob Clampett is putting into this cartoon, it works, and it works to this day.
The idea of, you know, the American who is incredibly patriotic, you know, supports every single cause possible, you know, the police, the army, the military, the navy, the whatever. The fact that if you were to take not all these people, because I do believe there are patriotic Americans who would gladly serve their country if given the opportunity. But I think that there are going to be some extremely patriotic Americans even today who, yeah, I think if you know, if the seconds they're told, hey, you've been selected to go to war, or due to something of another, your business is going to be responsible for helping the war effort, they obviously wouldn't go mad. You know, they wouldn't like throw like papers around and just. And like quit their job or whatever, but they would immediately go, oh, I don't want to actually fight. Like, I don't want to actually put in the work.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're podcast hosts who are talking about Looney Tunes cartoons. Yeah. Would we fight for our country?
No.
I don't know. We haven't. We would gladly do USO shit. We would gladly do stand-up for the troops.
Yes.
We would do a show for the troops. Yes. We would absolutely do that. We are cowards. We do not have the gung-ho to be like, hell yeah, let's go to the desert. Like, no.
I'm just going to say this. You do not want to, like, hand me a semi-automatic weapon and say, now go fight him. That is not someone you want to trust with a gun.
No.
God.
So yeah, so I think that the fact that this cartoon, it still holds up amazingly well.
Yeah.
You know, even though the draft itself hasn't really been a thing for a while, but yeah, it's a very good takedown of American patriotism and how far people are actually willing to go to put their money where their mouth is.
Exactly. And not only has this one aged well, but they would go back to this well in Tiny Toon's Adventures, and they would bring back the draft board guy in an episode, which was actually a good idea, and I'm glad they did it. So I'm glad they kept this going even after World War II ended. So, great.
I have said on Twitter that I would like to see more of The Man from the Draft Board, mm-hmm. So I will give that Tiny Toon Adventures episode a watch.
Yeah, no, I didn't grow up with Tiny Toons that much, but I imagine it's good.
Oh, yeah.
All right. In terms of an anvil rating, I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5. I was genuinely impressed with this Bob Clampett cartoon. I can't believe I just said that phrase. I think it's a classic. I think more people should know about this one.
I agree. I'm also giving it a 4.5 out of 5. Pretty much what you said. The energy is electric. Mm-hmm. No pun intended, as there are shots of actual Daffy as electricity just running around everywhere. I love the speed of the thing. I love the turn of character with Daffy as soon as he realizes. Just the quick turn. Again, I love this. The quick turn of happy, optimistic, go America Daffy. And as soon as he's told you're going to war, he immediately becomes a coward. He immediately is fearful for his life, and he immediately doesn't want to do it.
Yes.
You know, I laughed hard watching this cartoon. This was
a good one.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
So good. So our final cartoon.
Yes.
The one you have been waiting for.
When you put it like that.
All right, Spence. Anyway, for Falling Hair,
yeah,
was released on October 30th, 1943. In terms of what happened that day,
Moscow declaration was made by U.S. Secretary of State Cordell Hull, British Foreign Secretary Anthony Eden, Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin, that old Russian Yankee, and Fu Xinjiang, the ambassador to the USSR from the Republic of China government based in Beijing, who signed on behalf of China. Will this be good? Who knows?
This short was written by Bob Clampett and written by Warren Foster.
Yes, it was. And second Bob Clampett cartoon in a row. And not to foreshadow too much, but I think that I'm also going to have more nice things to say about Bob Clampett in this one.
Yes, so here's a little bit of a trivia about this. This is a very interesting one because it's just a combination of just all things we like kind of collide into each other.
Yeah.
So the original title of this short was going to be Bugs Bunny and the Gremlin.
Yeah.
It had to be retitled because... This is the weirdest freaking coincidence here. Back in the 1940s, a young up-and-coming author by the name of Roald Dahl.
Yeah, Roald Dahl.
You know, famous acclaimed author of such books as Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Witches, Golden Touch, Big Fucking Giant.
James and the Giant Peach, the Nicki Minaj story.
Yes, those. So
he's also my favorite author growing up, so that's why Mark's being so delicate.
So his first ever novel was called The Gremlins. And the whole reason that he wrote this book was because Walt Disney was just fascinated by this book to the point where, or fascinated with Dahl, to the point where he got the rights to do The Gremlins as a Walt Disney feature animation.
Right.
And because the movie's called The Gremlins, and Gremlins is a very popular name for a fictitious creature, the Disney company, like I guess, must have sent out a memo to the other animation studios saying, hey, please do not produce any films involving Gremlins.
Right.
Here's the issue with that. Warner Brothers have already made two cartoons far into production that had references to Gremlins. One of them being this cartoon, Falling Hair. The other one being Russian Rhapsody, right, which is not the Russian dub of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Is this real life? Is this fantasy? Caught in landslide, no escape from Minsk.
Just like Bohemian Rhapsody in Russia, I believe, has even less gay sex. Anyways, in order to, like, not get a compromise, Leif Schlesinger just had the short retitled to Falling Hair because the climax of the short is a plane falling out of the sky. So, it fits.
It does.
This fun little copyright law. That's fun. This short is in the public domain, meaning that if we right now wanted to play the entire cartoon short in its entirety, we would not get into trouble whatsoever.
Exactly. And we're not going to because, you know, we don't want to, you know, we want you to seek it out and watch it yourself. But if we wanted to, you know, even the little audio clips we could put into this, you know, which Mark, you'll probably do in post, like, we're not going to get sued for that because, you know, it's public domain. And there's a whole rant that you could have about the fact that, you know, a lot of the properties that are ruling a lot of large companies right now, including Disney, should be public domain by now. And like, because of copyright laws, a lot of companies have more power than they should. But because Warner Brothers forgot to renew a copyright license from United Artists in the 1960s, this is public domain. Anybody can use it. Anybody can put it anywhere. So that's pretty cool. And also because it's inappropriate, you know, it's not like a completely inappropriate censored 11 kind of Warner Brothers that would be in the public domain.
No.
It's, you know,
no,
it's great.
Yeah. So we start with a visual gag about, you know, how everything. So we're at this military base, our shortest place on this military base. And we, our first gag, it's a really good gag, just a sign that just says, you know, a number of men on station, censored. Yeah. How many planes are available, censored. What men think of the sergeant, which is in large letters, censored.
Yes. A reference to everything about missions being classified. This is essentially a throwaway joke from a Private Snafu cartoon.
And then we find Bugs just... You know, he's on a, you know, he's chilling by a bomber plane, and he's reading the book, Victory Through Air Power, amazing. And of course, that's a little joke to the book, Victory Through Air Power, which Victory Through Air Power was actually made into a 1943 Walt Disney film of the same name.
Oh my God, we are stepping on Disney's toes this entire time.
Oh, We're gonna get way worse as we go on with this show. Oh. Anyways, so Bugs is just leaning on a blockbuster bomb.
Yes.
Insert easy joke here. Just go ahead. I don't know, like Pluto Nash. That's an easy joke.
I thought you were gonna say something about the actual, you know, the actual former video store chain.
No, because that was a sad blockbuster bomb. Anyway,
I mean, so, if you want to rent the one in Oregon for you know, an Airbnb, you know.
Oh, hey kids, we're going to Oregon. Apologies to our listeners in Oregon.
Oh.
If you're out there. Anyways, so then Bugs, you know, he's laughing because he's seeing this, you know, this part of the book about how there is these little gremlins who wreck planes.
Yes.
Of course, you know, and as a little English joke, you know, Bugs doesn't say the term is diabolical sabotage. Of course, he says it diabolical sabotage.
Yeah, very Bugs Bunny pronunciation.
Then as he's, you know, laughing about these gremlins, sure enough, a gremlin walks right by him. and the gremlin is just hammering away at this bomb, trying to detonate it. And of course, Bugs just chops that carrot, looks at the gremlins like, hey, what you doing, bub? The gremlin's like, oh, you know, I'm just, you know, hang on this, you know, this blockbuster bomb, you know, to hit it just right. And Bugs just goes, oh, hey, listen, I'll get your hand at this. Okay, no. Gremlin, he gives the gremlins carrots, and he's winding himself up. His body is completely winding himself around him to hit this bomb. He's about to hit it. He stops. There's a great cymbal crash of like him stopping, and just a great yell.
What am I doing?
And for the record, if you want to, because it's public domain, you can put in the actual clip, and we're not going to get sued. So.
And now we get Angry Bugs,
yes.
Which is something that we've said we're not huge fans of. You know, we like it better when Daffy gets mad more than Bugs gets mad. However, I do have to say, though, Bugs' expressions in this short are really good.
His
angry expressions are really funny, and they really get the point across that he's just completely aggravated by this little gremlin creature.
Yeah. I love the joke. Is next where Bugs like sort of just as the gremlin's crawling around him, where he sort of just goes like, you know, a little very
like, hey, I think that's a yeah.
Could that have been a gremlin? And the gremlin just goes, it ain't Wendell Willkie, who ran for president 3 years earlier, which is about as obscure as mentioning Tim Kaine now. Remember 4 years ago when we thought he could have been vice president? And also, speaking of topical, because right after this, the gremlin whops Bugs with a monkey wrench, and Bugs goes into an impression of Lenny from A Vice and Men, which is also a topical impression, because that was the early 40s.
Yeah, it's just, and just the gremlin just going that way. I love the drawing of the gremlins that way, because it's, again, it's very, like, you know, the eyes are both ways, and the hands are pointed both ways, and the chorus to it. Buck just falls over.
And we have a good 30 seconds of Clampett-esque madness here as with the gremlins screwing with Bugs. I mean, it sort of works, like just the gremlin just screwing around with Bugs' tongue or just his, you know, just his eyes, eyelids or whatever. And it's amusing. It doesn't work for me as much as in Drafty Daffy, but it's very good, you know, Clampett hijinks. Now we get the powerhouse sequence, right?
Yes, yes.
As the gremlin starts up the plane, we finally get airborne about halfway into it, which I honestly think we could have gotten airborne sooner, but the fact that we're now finally getting up into this plane and doing some warplane hijinks now is also very cool, as the powerhouse is playing, which is one of the not a crutch that WB would use, but Warner liked using that music cue. But yeah, a lot of this cartoon, even as we get into the plane, is Bugs losing to the gremlin who keeps screwing with him. Unlike Drafty Daffy, this doesn't work as well because we usually don't want to see Bugs lose, as you were saying. So seeing him frustrated and seeing things happen to him isn't as effective as seeing those happy to Daffy. However, Bugs makes it work here because of just, honestly, Clampett makes it work here because of just the speed of the animation and just how many things are happening to him in a small bit of time. So we side with Bugs, but at the same time, it's a very much needed sort of bit of madness. Because, you know, there's the whole thing where, you know, he sees the gremlin outside the plane and he's trying to smash in. And we get this slow build of Bugs doing a running start to get the gremlin.
Yeah. And, like, in the plane's, like, inside is getting warped.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it's up.
And
I love that.
The timing of this, the music swells. And as the music swells, the gremlin slowly opens the door of the plane as he's all the way reared back. That is so well timed. This is another really good Carl Stalling cartoon because Carl is just doing a lot of his best, like, fast-paced work in this. Yeah, Bugs sprints out of the plane. We get a brief jackass joke, which is very Clampett. And then he runs in and there's like 50 banana peels on the ground left by the ground. I love that. I love that. One banana peel is funny. 50 banana peels is very funny because it's just excessive, which is even sillier. It is kind of fun seeing all the ways the gremlin can catapult Bugs out of the plane, like opening a trap door or doing like both double doors of the plane. I mean, even if it is Bugs, it works for me because of just the elements of surprise of, okay, now this is happening. Like, it works. And now we've gotten to the escalation, the point where we're hurtling this plane towards a city and Bugs has to steer it through two buildings.
Okay. About that. Okay.
I think I know what you're going to say.
How much you want to bet? How much you want to bet this short got a significantly reduced airplay around the early 2000s because of this bit?
I'm with you. I think that's the reason why it didn't make the first couple of Golden Collections.
Even now, watched him like, okay, that's a plane. And they're in a city.
Those are the World Trade Center. No, no.
No. I was like, okay. You know, there's probably like a horrible YouTube poop of like this short and that. And that person should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, no, there's probably just audio of a badly edited George Bush. He's like, I have declared war on Bugs Bunny because Bugs Bunny is a terrorist. Like some bad like chop together. There. You know.
Yeah. So,
not that we'd condone that sort of thing.
We do not. In fact, hold on. So I'm looking at the wiki page for this, and it says at the bottom, yes, you know, the fact that 56 years after this short, 9/11 would happen, but also, I completely didn't know this, but 2 years after this short came out, a USAAF B-25 Mitchell bomber was firmly flown into the Empire State Building on a foggy day. I had no idea this happened. So yeah, so pretty much what we're trying to say is this moment hasn't aged that well. Let's put it that way.
And then we get to this ending, right? Because the plane is plummeting downward. And meanwhile, the gremlin's just filing his nails. Bugs is going sheep white and then green and then freaking out. I love all of that.
And what it gets to me is the runner of, you know, the plane's going down and Bugs looks out the window and has a reaction. remind me very much of Chuck Jones's short Beat the Kitty, which would have a very similar kind of call and response type of thing with Mark Anthony and the
yes.
Kitty.
We love that one as well. That's a great one. But yeah, the plane's bracing for impact. It's like the wings are falling off. And then about 5 feet from the ground, it runs out of gas.
Runs
out
of
gas. I love that gag so much. And Bugs literally just goes, you know, the gremlin's like, sorry, folks, we ran out of gas. And Bugs is like, you know how it is with these A cars. That is like a funny little military jargon kind of joke about yep. American manufacturing. But such a great ending. Such a funny gag.
Yeah, so as for any fun trivia stuff, there's a guy by the name of Joe Dante. Big Looney Tunes.
Oh, yeah, Big Looney Tunes.
And obviously, this is a cartoon that has a gremlin in it. A lot of media in the 60s and 70s and 80s and whatever really liked this cartoon. Like this is a cartoon that industry people just love.
Oh, yeah.
Because, first of all, Joe Dante named his creatures of the movie Gremlins. Mm-hmm. My guess is he couldn't get Bob Clampett to cameo, so we just got Chuck Jones instead. Not bad. footage from the short was in a trailer for Gremlins 2. Oh. So there's that. There's also the fact that this ending gag was, of course, used in Looney Tunes Back in Action when the spy car is about to follow this guy. Says, up, all out of gas. Then Jenna Elfman just goes, what? How any of this works, and then it just crashes to the ground.
That movie is better than most people give it credit for, by the way.
It is.
We'll talk about that eventually.
And we'll get to it. And in fact, speaking of Tiny Toon Adventures, Tiny Toon Adventures would do a parody in their Halloween special of the There's a Thing at the End of the Wing from the
Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. Yeah, yes. Gremlin on the Wing. That's a great one.
So what was Plucky Duck, and of course, it was the Gremlin from Flying Hair. So pretty much, this cartoon has pretty much gone full circle when it comes to inspirations and people inspired by it and how they would use it in their own ways. Also, Bugs Bunny yelling. It's really funny.
It is.
I really
it's I feel like it's been used in other places, but
yes, it has. It was used in his hair raising. It was used in his hair raising tale.
Ah, yes.
It was a 1951 short.
Right. So yeah, I really like Falling Hair, for the record. I don't like it as much as Raffy Daffy, but it's fantastic. It feels epic. The plain stuff feels epic to me. Wild as hell. The gremlin grew on me as it went on. Again, speed of animation and gags is high here. It works for me, though. Again, we could have gotten to the plane in a bit quicker and cut out some of the ground screwing with them. But against all odds, I enjoyed yet another Bob Clampett cartoon. This gets a four out of five for me.
And so here's where I put this. I gave Super Rabbit a 3 out of 5. I gave Draft the Daffy a 4.5 out of 5. This short is funnier than Super Rabbit, but not as funnier as Drafty Daffy. So in terms of like a rating, I'm giving it kind of like in the middle of all those ratings. I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5. It is funnier than Super Rabbit. It's not as funny as Drafty Daffy. However, the short is pretty good. I had some nice laughs with it. Yes. I love how this gremlin character is such an asshole. He is such a He's a cause for destruction, and I like that. Yeah. And even though it is a short where it's Bugs being picked on, and we don't like those,
right, yeah.
the speed of the animation and just the expression work and just the ending is great because Bugs is calm, cool, and collected the second the cast is. It's like oh okay, not gonna die, cool, collected. I'm eating a carrot. I'm me again. That's good. And so that's my thoughts on Falling Hair. Let's get into next week.
Next week is the abstract one, right?
Oh, yes. So, we're going to be doing some abstract or just odd shorts that we personally find. So, we're going to do Porky and Wacky Land, good, which is a classic, crazy. The Moth Who Came to Dinner, which was a short that I found on one of the Golden Collections. And it's just, the framing of it is very weird to me. So we'll get to that.
I don't have any familiarity with that.
And Bowery Bugs.
Yes.
Which was your recommendation.
I recommended it because it goes on some very strange logic. And it comes off, it's an oddity for a number of reasons. And we're going to get into all of them next week. But it just, from the way it operates, from the way it weaves this story, from the very weird natured ending of this, even down to the fact that this is directed by Arthur Davis for his only directorial, or for one of his only directorial Looney Tunes. It's an oddity to me in so many ways, and I think we'll add a lot to our discussion next week.
All right, so that is the end of this week's show. If you'd like to keep up with all of this on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHallam1995.
And you can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast and give your thoughts for next week's show, you can follow at @that_Looney or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find us wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, whatever the heck. We're out there. We're ready. We're doing stuff.
So until next week, I'm Mark.
And I've been Jordan Schmidt saying, the horror. The horror.